The possibility is that North Korean regime recognizes that the continued pursuit of these nuclear weapons and missiles is a dead end.
North Korea agrees to talk about the Olympics in South Korea. It's Monday, January 8th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, health a major concern among Rohingya. Cannabis and heat impact Australia. South Korea's annual immersion in college exams. Alcohol and cancer, big tech on display. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says he hopes the newly arranged talks between North and South Korea will go beyond the Olympics and promised the United States will take part at the appropriate time. Trump gave an unusual news conference on Saturday from the Camp David presidential retreat, where he met with Republican lawmakers. Of the upcoming talks between Seoul and Pyongyang on January 9th, Trump said, "I hope it works out.
If we can come up with a very peaceful and very good solution, we're working on it with Rex, we're working on it with a lot of people. If something can happen and something can come out of those talks, that would be a great thing for all of humanity. That would be a great thing for the world."
The president expressed hope the talks could lead to other positive developments beyond the Winter Olympics next month, which South Korea is hosting. North Korea on Friday accepted South Korea's offer of high-level talks on the upcoming Olympic Games. The talks are to take place at the truce village of Panmunjom, the heavily fortified demilitarized zone dividing the two Koreas. As North Korea's nuclear and missile program quickly evolves, VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren sought to find out more on the Trump administration's response by speaking with his national security advisor, H.R. McMaster.
I think there's ample evidence that Pakistan, through AQ Khan, who was their basically their architect of their nuclear weapon program, was very helpful to North Korea in developing their program. Do you have any suspicion that Iran and North Korea have worked together, even with the development of missile technology, anything at all?
Yes. I mean, I think that, you know.
And are they doing it now? Are they doing it now?
Well, I mean, I'd leave that to our intelligence professionals to answer that question. But if you look at North Korea's track record, North Korea has never met a weapon that it has not proliferated. I mean, it was building a nuclear reactor in a clandestine site in Syria, for example. North Korea is selling weapons across the world to all sorts of regimes and bad actors. And North Korea has stated that it would be willing to proliferate nuclear weapons for the right price. And so you have a regime that could possess nuclear weapons that could engage in extortion, blackmail, and then sell those most destructive weapons on Earth to the highest bidder or to anybody willing to meet their price.
Well, it's pretty evident that they have an aggressive program, and they've been developing it for decades, both missile and nuclear warheads as well. Is there, and the GREET framework, as you noted, didn't work because they cheated. And the program has gone on and on and on. We've tried sanctions. We've engaged the world. We've done a lot of different things to try to deter this nuclear program in North Korea. Is there anything short? Do you see anything short of war at this point? And I'm not saying I'm advocating for war or against it, but what are the solutions? What are the possibilities?
Well, I mean, the possibility is that North Korean regime recognizes that the continued pursuit of these nuclear weapons and missiles is a dead end, and the only way to do that really now, short of war, is through coercive economic power that rests mainly in the hands of China, but with others as well. And the trend has been extremely positive. The trend has been positive in that more and more countries are stopping all trade with North Korea. Vietnam, for example, the Philippines, the list really is quite a long one.
But there's the illicit. They just stopped. There are just two ships with petroleum that have been products in violation of sanctions that have been stopped in the last 2 weeks. So it's getting in there, some of it.
Well, that's why everybody needs to do more. You've seen South Korea just interdict two ships and impound two ships. And the new UN sanctions will allow even greater sanctions on shipping companies that allow this illicit trade to continue. But really, as everybody knows, China has the vast majority of the coercive economic power over the North. And it's our hope that China will act in its interest. You know, we can't ask them to do more than act in their interest.
The hope, but China hasn't. And the president, even long before he became president, I used to interview him when he was just a businessman in New York, because he would talk about China and how they didn't deal fairly with the United States. What makes you think that China now is going to change to use their economic muscle to try to get a result out of North Korea? Is it just the fear that there'll be 26 million people over the borders into North Korea, and that Japan and South Korea want to become nuclear powers? Is that the only thing that's going to change China?
No, China recognizes that the situation has changed fundamentally. And China recognizes three fundamental shifts in their own thinking and three fundamental shifts in what we all have to do together. The first shift is that denuclearization of the peninsula is the only acceptable answer. It used to be that you'd hear a lot of talk about freeze for freeze or suspension for suspension. There's a recognition that that's no good anymore because their programs have progressed too far. The second thing is China recognizes that this is a problem really between North Korea and the whole world, including a problem between North Korea and China. There used to be old talk about, well, this is really a problem between the United States and North Korea. China recognizes that it is in China's interest to denuclearize the peninsula, and that's because of the threat of a breakdown in the non-proliferation regime. What if South Korea, what if Japan conclude that they have to arm in similar ways to North Korea? And the third thing is that China recognizes that it really does have the coercive economic power to resolve this situation. And it'll be up to China when and if they make those decisions. As you know, the UN Security Council has come up with more and more restrictions on North Korea, more and more sanctions against North Korea. Those have to be rigorously enforced. But we also have to acknowledge that's not going to be enough. And I think you're right about this. I mean, North Korea, unless more pressure is applied, will not conclude that it's in its interest to denuclearize.
If we cut off his ability to launch a nuclear weapon, if he doesn't have the fuel to do it, he still has all those artillery weapons on the, you know, on the southern part of North Korea pointed right at South Korea. What's the strength that he has there?
Well, of course, this is what North Korea has done, right, over the years, has held the South Korean population at risk. Also, it's been clear since 1953 that the South Korea, that the United States poses no threat to North Korea. Every provocation has come out of North Korea.
U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster speaking exclusively with VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley says North Korea's nuclear threat remains very dangerous. Insurgents say Rohingya have no option but to fight Burmese terrorism. 32 missing, tanker ablaze after collision off China. 500 flee surprise eruption of remote Papua New Guinea volcano. Virtual reality helping Australians protect from catastrophic brush fires. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and also our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson. Health workers are concerned with outbreaks of diseases in the massive Rohingya camps housing more than 650,000 people. Cramped quarters, malnourished, and pre-existing health conditions add up to real concerns as new cases of diphtheria worry aid workers. Steve Sanford reports from Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh.
Here in Balukali Refugee Camp, dirty water and squalid conditions are prime breeding grounds for outbreaks of preventable diseases. While 900 doses of oral cholera vaccine have been distributed in the camps, another contagious bacterial infection has emerged.
Diphtheria is a vaccine-preventable disease. It's an illustration of how the Rohingya population that are currently living in the makeshift settlements here had very little access to health care from their place of origin in Myanmar.
Myanmar's health sector is rated among the worst in the world, particularly in the ethnic regions, where conflict and poverty limit medical treatment. Now, potential diphtheria carriers must get antitoxins and antibiotics to prevent further spread of the bacterium in the body and kill it.
Find all the suspected cases in the camps and to get them all here. Start the antibiotic treatment and keep them isolated for 48 hours.
Doctors Without Borders and health partners like the International Federation of Red Cross isolate measles and diphtheria patients to prevent further outbreaks. But one of the biggest challenges for health workers is getting to remote locations where potential outbreaks can occur.
They live in areas that are difficult to reach. You cannot reach them by cars or by tom-toms because of the it's not roads, it's dirt roads. So they will have to carry their patients to where they can get treated.
With Bangladesh's Ministry of Health implementing a vaccination campaign to prevent future outbreaks of diphtheria, at least some members of the next generation of Rohingya will be protected from vaccine-preventable diseases. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh.
Happening now in Asia, China's Ministry of Transport says 32 crew members of an oil tanker are missing after the vessel collided with a bulk freighter. The ministry says the tanker was completely lost to fire. Authorities report the 21 crew members of the freighter, all Chinese nationals, have been rescued. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us on this Monday morning on VOA Asia. Australia is to become the fourth country in the world to allow exports of cannabis-based therapies. Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us the federal government hopes the reforms will help Australia become a world leader in the medicinal cannabis market.
Laws to allow exports of Australian cannabis-based therapies will come into force in February, according to the federal health minister. It will allow Australian-produced oils, lozenges, sprays and pills to be sold overseas for the first time. Advocates have argued the plant-based treatments can relieve severe pain associated with many medical conditions, including multiple sclerosis, and to reduce the impact of cancer therapies. Potential export markets include South America, Spain, Canada and Germany. Australian Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt says allowing exports will help the developing domestic market to expand.
We have a world-class reputation for our clean and green farm products. Put them all together and we are brilliantly placed to be a world leader in medical development and medical cannabis.
Officials say medicinal cannabis exports have the potential to create a lucrative new agricultural industry within Australia, similar to that already established for the use of Australian-grown poppies for medicinal and scientific purposes. Only Canada, the Netherlands and Uruguay have so far legalised the export of medicinal marijuana. Israel has said it intends to do so within months. Victoria became Australia's first state to legalise cannabis for medical use, following changes to federal laws in 2016. However, there are some concerns. Doctors have been reluctant to prescribe the products. Despite the new export laws, the use of cannabis for non-medicinal purposes remains illegal in Australia. Cannabis cultivation in Australia is still relatively small because recreational use of marijuana remains prohibited.
Cannabis plants, or any other for that matter in Australia, will need some special care as extreme heat is baking much of the country. Emergency authorities there have released a virtual reality program recreating potentially catastrophic bushfire scenarios. The project aims to encourage residents in the state of Victoria to prepare for extreme danger. Phil Mercer has now had a cooling sip of water and returns with details.
This emergency warning is being issued for Hare Creek. There is a bushfire at Hare Creek that is out of control.
The virtual reality programs have three different scenarios. They show how residents who leave it too late to respond to an advancing bushfire can face disastrous consequences. Officials say the technology allows Australians to get a taste of the type of hostile conditions they may face and helps them make better decisions. The simulation urges homeowners to decide early whether to leave, seek shelter, or stay and defend their property. Southeastern Australia, one of the world's most fire-prone regions, has been preparing for a scorching weekend, with temperatures forecast as high as 45 degrees Celsius. Victoria State's Emergency Management Commissioner Craig Lapsley says the bushfire risk in some areas will be extreme.
Obviously it's about heat, it's about fire. We're going to see a fire today that's going to be hot, dry and windy, and with a wind change late in the day that if we had fires running in the afternoon, the wind change will change the direction of the fires, and traditionally that is where we lose most of our property after the wind change. So it's one of those days that's got everything in it. Look after yourself, your neighbours, your family, your friends.
Australia's most deadly bushfire killed 173 people in Victoria in 2009. However, Australia's deadliest natural hazard is extreme heat. More than twice as many victims lost their lives in the heatwave that preceded the so-called Black Saturday blazes. It's the very young, the infirm, and those over the age of 75 who are most at risk from searing temperatures. Heat-related illness, which can occur when body temperature exceeds 37.8 degrees Celsius, includes dehydration, cramps, heat exhaustion, and heat stroke. The consequences can be catastrophic, resulting in heart attacks, brain damage, and death. Firefighters have been predicting one of the worst fire seasons on record. They say warmer conditions have been coupled with a very dry winter. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. News alert from VOA Asia. The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, says it is good for the United States that North and South Korea are set to engage in high-level talks, but warned Pyongyang's nuclear weapons ambitions still pose a serious threat to the world. VOA Asia Facebook has the latest, along with great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, every year in South Korea, more than 600,000 students take the critical National College Entrance Exam, Sunyun. It's an event that transforms the country into full test mode. Yuna Lee tells us more about the impact of this annual event.
Sunyun determines not only what university students will attend, but also their future career. Because of this, the entire country makes adjustments for the test takers' convenience. Public offices and private companies delay their start times to ease congestion and help students travel to their exam. Even the airline industry makes accommodations.
Every year in Korea, we hold back the takeoffs and landings of flights during the English listening exam to prevent any inconveniences for the students from aircraft noise.
Shouting good luck on your exam, sophomores and juniors bring banners to cheer on and encourage the seniors taking the exam. These chants have become a tradition.
I've been here since 6:30 a.m. to cheer for the seniors at my high school.
The head of Seoul's Metropolitan Office of Education is also here today to join in the cheering.
In Korea, the college entrance exam is very important. It is the determining factor for the student's college admission. The student's families take on this burden together. The student's parents are freed from all of the pressures and stress the day after the exam.
75% of South Korea's high school seniors took the college entrance exam this year. VOA Korean Service.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Malaysia has agreed to allow a U.S. firm to resume the search for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 that disappeared in March 2014. The Malaysian Transport Minister says that Ocean Infinity, a seabed exploration company, will not be paid if it does not find the plane. Stay abreast of the latest developments on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the World Health Organization classifies alcohol as a Group 1 carcinogen, and that means there's convincing evidence it can cause cancer in humans. But new research shows how alcohol can damage the body on a genetic level. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
Maybe you rang in the new year with one too many. Maybe you just keep it to a glass of wine at night with dinner. New research suggests that alcohol intake can lead to permanent genetic damage.
A missing part of the whole puzzle is how precisely alcohol causes damage to us. And what our research shows is that alcohol, as it's being processed by the body and converted into energy, transiently accumulates as a toxin which attacks DNA in a fundamental manner and damages the genetic information that constitutes the code of life.
The toxin is called acetaldehyde. It is produced when the body processes alcohol, and research suggests it can damage human cells in a fundamental way.
This can happen at the level of a very important cell type known as the stem cell. And that's important because the stem cell is a cell that goes on to make many different types of cells and is the regenerating cell in our bodies.
And all that genetic damage can do harm, even deadly harm, to the human body.
We show that the chromosomes from these blood cells are fundamentally altered. And this is important because altered chromosomes or altered DNA is the basis of why cells ultimately go on to age or accumulate the changes that make them cancerous.
The body has an enzyme that breaks down acetaldehyde. Patel tested what alcohol does to cells without it.
So in mice, when we take away the enzyme that clears the toxin, as well as this DNA repair pathway, then very small amounts of alcohol cause violent damage to the cells that produce blood.
Also, most people have a range of DNA repair systems, but Patel says binge drinking can overwhelm those lines of defense and do serious genetic damage. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Well, nearly 4,000 companies and 170,000 people are descending into Las Vegas for the CES. It's a massive consumer electronics show. For many small technology companies, this event is a big opportunity to raise their profile. VOA's Michelle Quinn visits one San Francisco company to learn how they are preparing for the Super Bowl of conferences.
Here at the headquarters of Capture Proof, employees are getting ready for CES. It will be the fourth time the health technology startup will go to the giant consumer electronics show held in Las Vegas.
So we are on crunch. We have the booth being finalized for the image, and that will go to the printer.
For Megan Conroy, chief executive and founder of Capture Proof, there are decisions to make before the big event. The type of padding on the booth floor, the booth furniture, what to give away.
Yeah.
It cost the company $12,000 to attend CES.
It's the Super Bowl of conferences.
Once there, the biggest challenge is getting noticed. Capture Proof will put its logo high off the floor. And then there are the giveaways.
I believe bags are awesome for conferences because people carry them around and show off your name. We have awesome pens that we give out that have our logo. People like to put stickers on their computers.
The company is shipping everything, the carpeting, the pens, the booth graphics, all to Las Vegas. One final consideration is footwear. CES is spread out over miles. Conroy plans on wearing heels, but she has a plan.
You do heat for a minute, ice for a minute. It helps reduce the swelling and makes your feet feel better by the morning.
For Conroy, the pain and cost is worth it. For 1 week, the tech world comes together to show off its wares. She has to be there. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
We're glad you've been with us on VOA Asia as we celebrate 1 year on the air. Today has been 1 year since we began VOA Asia. Thanks to everybody who's joined us in that period. And we're gaining new listeners each and every day on many radio stations across Asia. We thank everybody who has come on board to listen to our program. Stay with us. We're going to have an exciting year ahead. We also like to say hello to everybody in Myanmar who is listening via Facebook on VOA Burmese. Thank you. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer John Ellison, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.